Looks like we're after 4 o'clock here. We'll go ahead and get started. If there's people come in, they can join us. Obviously, with a small group like this, anytime you have a question, just feel free to stop me and ask me. We'll make it very interactive and things. We know that God made our body, but He entrusted us to take care of it and provide the maintenance. So that's why I put body by God, maintenance by you.
Body's supposed to be the temple of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's out there in taking care of our body, there's always a lot of places that have a lot of promises. Here we got Body Depot, right?
Order right.
So, and the same thing we hear about diets and all other sorts of things. And of course, everything is new and improved. See, here's a new way. This actually should say, yeah, maybe it pulls down a little farther.
Oh,
drug-free dentistry. Stay. Here we go. Okay. So we just bring the boxer in for that. And everything, these diet plans are seem to be real complex. Don't overthink it. See, here's the basketball player. Just shoot. You're thinking about it too much.
Yep. My granddaughter was a basketball player in high school.
So, fit and well for life. You want to adopt a wellness lifestyle. It's the most important thing you can do to ensure high quality of life. And it also helps to delay the aging process down the road. For those of you that were in my session yesterday, we talked about the 6 dimensions of wellness. And all of these are very important. We're hitting, of course, primarily on physical wellness in here. But they all tie together to make this six dimensions of wellness. Some of the lifestyle factors. Diet and eating habits play an important role. The physical activity and exercise. Having a healthy outlook on things, very important. Coping strategies to help ease the stress. There's some alarming trends in the United States. We've seen these series of cover of Newsweek magazine, epidemic of diabetes. We'll talk about a little bit later. A lot of issues and trends that are not positive in the United States. So why some of the increase in some of these problems? A lot of lifestyle issues, a lot of technology and things that we're not in balance. You see the balance scale up there? Think of us as a scale. So many times the calories we're consuming are not balancing out with the amount of physical activity. When we have more calories consumed, we have larger food portions and sizes. Did anyone happen to see Morgan Spurlock's Super Size Me? Very interesting documentary focusing primarily on McDonald's, but we could take it across all of the things, all the other fast food places, and how sizes have gotten bigger.
You know, that's a subtle thing. So we do eat out in nice restaurants, put this order one thing and split it.
In fact, you know what, I have that coming up as an idea. Also, increases in soda, pizza, candy consumption. Fewer calories are being used up. Here are some tips for healthy eating. Don't drink your calories, especially if we're thinking of sodas and such. Decrease eating out. Bring a lunch, because typically the lunch that you're going to bring is probably, in many cases, going to be healthier than what you buy if you're eating out. Look at the nutrition facts. We're going to take a look at a food label here in a moment. Of course, you're much better eating those smaller meals throughout the day, so you're not hungry. And also, eat slower and savor every bite. Some tips. So, eating out. Order an appetizer, only eat half an entree, or share it with someone. Great idea. Avoid buffets. It's great food over here, but that's great stuff. But so obviously, if you frequent those, make sure that if you do that, you're taking sensible portions. Don't be afraid to ask for substitutions on items. sharing the entrees, and then order those salads with dressing on the side.
Or don't eat any dressing at all.
Or in any case, you may not. Or if you order the dressing, a vinaigrette or a lighter dressing. Okay, here we go. Here's our portion sizes. Okay, 20 years ago, that was a typical turkey sandwich. 320 calories. Here's the Subway sandwich. Any guesses how many calories in that?
Twice as much, 600.
Well, let's take, how about like 820? So, you know, approaching three times as much, and which means the calorie difference, 500 calories more. So we're eating these Subways chock full of, even though it may be, it's healthy stuff. You know, we're getting lean turkey and vegetables in there and such. It's just a lot of calories that we're taking in. Here's a food label. Some key things to look on the label. Right up there, you can see that's the total calories, but probably more important than looking at the total calories is go a little bit higher, servings per container. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you take a bag of something or a can of something, you look at it, you say, oh, that's only, you know, 100 calories. But there's three or four servings in that container. And another interesting thing is that they tell you the calories from fat. We all know, we're going to take a look here, that we should be somewhere maybe around 25% of our total caloric intake should come from fat. But we have to do the math to figure this one out. And everything else, they figure out percentages and things. So kind of an interesting thing that they haven't changed there. Grocery shopping for health. You ever think about the healthier foods around the perimeter of the store? The produce and fruits, vegetables. Yeah, those kind of things are on the perimeter. The canned stuff is in the middle of the store. So buy the fruits and vegetables when they're in season. Ideally, when you can, plan weekly meals. Shopping with a list reduces that impulse buying. Oh, that looks great. Of course, you're always looking for sale items. Oh, shop with a full stomach.
Yeah, that's right.
You ever notice when you go and you're hungry, it's like, wow, everything looks better. Okay, let's take a look at vitamins and minerals. Okay, we know these vitamins are organic substances. They're required in small amounts. Do vitamins have energy?
Not much.
No. The only thing that has energy... Well, they have to have calories to have energy, and that would be proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. And so we need vitamins to make certain chemical reactions happen in the body, but directly they do not have any energy. So if we look at the vitamins, we have water-soluble. Those are the ones we need to have every day in our diet because they're flushed out since they're water-soluble. B-complex, and just to kind of fill you in on some of the B-complex, you may have heard of thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, there's B6, B12, pantothenic acid,
folic.
In fact, that was the next one. What's the importance of folic acid or folate, especially in females?
Prevents neural tube.
That's exactly it. It prevents neural tube defects. And so all women of reproductive age, really probably all, everyone, but especially women of reproductive age, need to make sure they're getting adequate amounts of folic acid.
You know, it's a law, though. You have to have to
yes.
All the rich flowers.
Yes. Okay. And also vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin. Our fat-soluble vitamins are A, D, E, and K. Or if you're spelling it, it's DECA with a K, too. So we also have minerals. These are inorganic compounds, and there are 17 essential that we need scattered throughout the diet. Okay, sources of energy. We know that energy is measured in calories, and the average adult requires about 2,000 calories. Give or take, some people get by with a little less. Some people, if you're very active, you're going to need considerably more. If we're breaking it down, we know that in every gram of protein and carbohydrate has 4 calories. And fat has 9. So why do you think fat has more than twice as many calories in every gram? What's the purpose of fat? Storage. If you want to store things up, in fact, that's why they sell those bags that you can put the vacuum cleaner on and to, if you want to store your winter sweaters for the summer, you put them in a bag and you suck all the air out and you get into a nice small little package because you want to put them away so they don't take up much space. So fats have 9 calories in every gram, so they're very calorically dense. They're great for storage. Protein. Somewhere between 15 and 20% of our calories in our diet should come from protein. They're an important part of muscle, bone, blood, enzymes, a lot of other things. We have these little amino acids. And there's, depends on who you look, what you look at, there's somewhere between 20 and 22 amino acids. And think of them as like letters of the alphabet. And the way you put them together is what kind of protein is made. You know, you put a certain of them, those amino acids together, and you make enzymes in a certain sequence, and or whatever kind of tissue we're trying to make in the body. And we know that meat, fish, poultry, eggs, so most of the things that come from animals or animal products are high in protein. You need to choose these wisely because many of the protein, the things that are high in protein are also high in fat as well. So you have to make sure you're getting lean sources of protein. Fats. Around 25 to 30% of your total calories coming from fat. You say, well, that still seems like quite a bit. Have you looked at a typical fast food menu? Most of the items on those menus are somewhere between 45 and 50% of the calories in those come from fat. So it takes a little bit of work to make sure you keep that there. We talked about this, a concentrated source of energy. We need fat in the body, but just in moderate amounts. And they also help to absorb our fat-soluble vitamins. Carbohydrates are our main energy source. Somewhere between 55 and 60% of the calories should come from carbohydrates. Important to have the carbs, especially during high-intensity exercise. The ones that we are looking for, America's need to consume more of the unrefined, complex carbohydrates. Whole grains, fibrous vegetables fall into those complex carbohydrates.
One of the biggest reasons it prevents diabetes. Because simple carbohydrates spike the sugar.
Yes, they do. In fact, we look at things like that glycemic index that's related to those yes?
Question before we go on to the next one. Can you talk just a little tiny bit about how proportions of fat, carbohydrate, and protein in the diet, if they should change as you age and should change with strenuous exercise?
Okay, good question. If you're, especially with strenuous exercise, you definitely need to have more carbohydrates. If you're going for a long hike, that's your main fuel source is having a diet that's high in carbohydrates. There's a lot of, getting to the other part of the question, there's a lot of discussion as to the amount of carbohydrates and fats and protein in the diet. You know, the zone diet, the old, you know, the 40-30-30 kind of thing. And there's a lot of discussion on that. Still, most people, it comes down to primarily, if you're looking at energy balance, looking at total calories. Now, I know there's a lot of people that get into a lot of details and splitting hairs on how much you get of each of those areas. And it is important. I'm not saying it's not important. But when it comes to the end, it's still the total number of calories that you take in is the most important. Although I'm just reading things in the paper that came out last week about, did you hear about the potato? The potatoes got hammered on this study. I think it was out of Harvard or and they said it's worse than about anything you could eat. The French fries or, yeah, so.
And they're recommending they not use potatoes in the school diet menu anymore.
Yeah.
That same study we're talking about. That is true.
So.
But that's not true, is it? I don't believe that study. I think it's what you put on the potatoes.
That and how you prepare the potatoes too. That's the thing we talk nutrition. I mean, there's so many different routes that you can take here.
And then
so,
how about as you age, should there be different? You know, should your plate look different, or should it look about the same as the plate I eat?
Well, I would like to think that if you're eating a good, balanced, healthy diet, the one thing is you're probably going to be maybe a little bit less active as you get older. I mean, and maybe in that case, maybe you're not taking in the kind of quantities that as you get older. But I'd like to think you still would have similar type balance in your diet. Now, one other really important thing here, look at the ingredients, and I'm going to skip right down to this one, this artificial sweeteners. You know, the one thing that very, again, this is almost, I'm editorializing here a bit. If you notice that the NutraSweet kind of mysteriously vanished from a lot of things, it's still out there in some things. I think there's probably some issues with NutraSweet kinds of things. I know a lot of people still use Equal and things. But it's kind of amazing how that kind of just slid right out and the Splenda type stuff has now replaced it. I'm not sure if it's in the safety of that and things, but I just know that I know a lot of people have had some issues, especially with the NutraSweet.
What is causing cancer? What are they saying?
I know that. My wife is in the room here, so I'll put her. She's had whenever she has it by mistake, body aches and just
actual physical reaction
to it. There's a lot of information that's still saying, "Oh yeah, it's okay," but it's kind of funny. It kind of slid out. You know, you didn't hear much. You know, talk about that. But I think any time artificial things, especially artificial sweeteners, I just tell people, you know what? Drink water. If you think you got to drink a diet soda, I mean, so many people think, well, this is great for me. It's diet soda. There's no calories. I'm not. Take the water option. Take something else if you're looking for a low or no calorie option.
Isn't soda categorically bad for you?
Yes. In fact, I've got more coming up here. But I would say whether it's got sugar in it or doesn't have sugar in it, it doesn't have a lot of redeeming value.
Okay.
So now, look at this. Can anyone tell me what this is?
Big words.
It's some rich cornmeal, but that's lots of other stuff besides.
A lot of stuff in it. Okay.
They do go in order, right? The most.
Yes, it does. You know, at least we got some cornmeal there. But then, look at all the other things. Now, this is a healthier version of a bad item, which healthier we put in quotes. There it is. Now, these are baked. You know, the baked are the healthy variety. And so, there's a, you know, the other one I was going to put up here, I don't know if anyone ever eats the Skinny Cow ice cream. And I mean, it came in with a list of, you know, it gets, they put a lot of things in it to get that texture, that ice cream. I mean, it still has probably some ice cream in it, but it's watered down to have the same flavor and texture as ice cream. But it has a big laundry list of items, you know,
I
chemically put
similar to thing to what you had in the first one there. That you can't pronounce them, don't eat it. Also, somebody said if you have more than five ingredients, don't eat it.
Right, right. Okay, is this food? Oh, here we go. Last game's leftovers. Okay. Now, is that food?
Sure.
Absolutely. That's good stuff. I mean, there's even some potatoes in there, too. You know? But we got some broccoli. We have color. You've heard that one before. Mm-hmm. You know, eat a variety of color. And see, we're seeing a lot of color in this as well. We've already talked about this. Yeah, we know this is not food. Some studies, the famous Framingham heart study. It's Framingham is in Massachusetts, and they studied over 6,000 subjects for several decades. That's why this is the landmark study. And they found that for one soda you drink per day, increase a 40% risk of obesity and metabolic syndrome. And you can see the laundry list here of high blood pressure, obesity, and several other things. And this study also found bad things coming out of diet sodas. Maybe a different list than some of these other things, but equally.
Hey, can you sort of explain what metabolic syndrome is? I've heard of it.
Well, metabolic syndrome is can be a variety of things, including probably type 2 diabetes is probably at the head of that list, which we're going to talk about here in a moment. But it includes a lot of these things are on that list. It's kind of a general category that encompasses a lot of different things. Okay, now here's our increasing sizes. Now, you can't see it over here, but underneath this one, this is the old 8-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola, 12, 16, 24, and now your pretty classic bottle here of 34-ounce soda. So that's the enlarging sizes that everyone demands. Oh, okay, here it is. This is the secret formula, okay? So first of all, one thing we need to know, that in every pound of fat, 3,500 calories. 3,500 calories in 1 pound. So here's the secret. This is a lot of assumptions, and of course, this is very theoretical. It doesn't always work for everyone. That if you can reduce your caloric intake 250 calories a day and increase your energy expenditure 250 calories per day, then we are, I should have a negative, a minus 500 calories per day. Now, that's assuming that you hadn't been doing anything previously and that you've been eating this pretty much standard diet. Again, a lot of assumptions here. So if we are negative 500 calories a day times 7 days, that comes out to 3,500 calories. And theoretically, 1 pound of fat loss for losing those 3,500 calories. Okay. Now, I don't know if everything else is equal here. For example, I've been hiking with my heart rate monitor. And on Sunday, I took a hike and it told me that I burned 1,400 calories. Yesterday, I took a run up the trail here and back, and about 700 calories yesterday. This morning, out to Monkey Bear Falls and back, and I burned about 1,400 calories. Now, I didn't plan that all out, but you can do the math and figure that it came out to about 3,500 calories. So, now I don't know if I've been eating extra calories in the dining hall or not, but if that were all true, that would theoretically relate to that. Now, everyone's metabolism the same? Does that work out for everyone? No, but every plan should be based on something, just pretty much you're burning more than you take in. So just some balance of either you're not taking in as many calories or you're burning some more off. And in fact, let's take a look here at some things. First of all, going out gardening, working around, burns 49 calories for 10 minutes. So if we went out gardening for an hour, you know, that would be about 300 calories, mm-hmm. Real close. Okay, so that's pretty close to that, to our number. You can see here some numbers for running and even walking around shopping. Get your walking. And in fact, tomorrow we're going to take a look at some other ways to get out and get some exercise without even thinking about it. Because things like this that we do every day, and we say, well, and then you get on yourself and say, well, I don't do any exercise. Well, sometimes just doing the things that we have to in life gets us our exercise. You can see even getting out a walk at 3 miles per hour burns 61 calories in 10 minutes. Now, I went and found some caloric intakes here I went. I had to go down. This was a list of the top 100 highest calorie things you could find in a fast food restaurant, and I had to get clear down to number 60. By the way, there were several that were pushing up 1,700 calories for one item. This is not a meal, one item. And so I just came on the list, and we can see that here's the quad stacker at Burger King, and the sub at Arby's, a Blizzard. There are 1,000 calories. Now remember, the average person should be getting about 2,000. So you have one item here that's coming close to your half of your daily intake. So it's pretty easy to find another choice that would be a few calories less than that. Cardiovascular disease, a lot of different things under this category. We have hypertension, that's atherosclerosis, not the cardiosclerosis we heard about last night. Okay. This is the hardening of the arteries. Heart disease, heart attacks, and strokes. Obviously, we know cardiovascular disease, the number one disease and killer in humans. The risk factors you want to change, we've already talked about these. Overweight, high blood pressure, high blood cholesterol, diabetes, physical inactivity, cigarette smoking. There's obviously risk factors you can't change over here, your age and your family history. The C-reactive protein level, that is an inflammatory reading that is often associated with various diseases, including cardiovascular disease. HDLs is good cholesterol, and the one way to raise that is exercise. And you want those HDLs, that good cholesterol, above 40. We also have the bad cholesterol. By the way, HDL, high-density lipoprotein, what that stands for, it means also heavy. It's very dense, and what it does, it goes through kind of like a physiological roto-rooter. So it's actually, as it goes through, it helps to clean out the arteries. And so, go ahead.
On what kind of numbers there are, is 42 really good? Do you get 100, or what kind of numbers do you have for
HDL? Well, I mean, typically, when we look at cardiac risk factors, they say if you're above 40, that's good. If you're below 40, that you probably could improve that. But if you get above 60, in cardiac risk factors, the American College of Sports Medicine has a listing. If you get above 60, it actually cancels out another risk factor. So getting it above 60 is very good. So if you were up well above 60, that's in very good shape. The low-density lipoprotein, or the LDL, the bad cholesterol, it's light. So it kind of rises up, it's sticky, and sticks to the walls of the arteries. And if that number gets too high, that's not good. Triglycerides, yes?
What in your diet affects the ratio and the presence of HDL and LDL?
Great question. The LDLs... basically, it's based on your intake. Mm-hmm. Now, but there's a whole lot of other. I have another slide coming up here in a little bit. A lot of times, it's the type of fats that you're eating too. In fact, I have a slide that talks about the people in Greece versus people in Japan, and we'll take a look at that as to what types of fats that they're taking in. So, I would say this is primarily based on. Your intake. Of course, a lot of people are on statin medicines to help to lower these numbers, your total cholesterol, as well as your LDLs. So, and of course, we want to keep that total cholesterol number. The total cholesterol is actually a combination of your HDLs, your LDLs, and a percentage of these triglycerides. That's actually where they get your total cholesterol. We know that hypertension or high blood pressure is considered the silent killer. It is a very controllable cardiovascular disease risk factor. Anything above 140 over 90, and in fact, we look at here, here's kind of where we want to be. When the heart contracts, that's that top number in the blood pressure, the systolic pressure. The bottom number, when the heart is relaxed, that is the diastolic. So think of this in a snapshot in time, the minimum and maximum blood pressures. And obviously, all of those kinds of things are helpful in reducing. They're finding, though, that sodium may not be as big a factor as they had thought in the past. Of course, the one problem is that our diet, I think they say the upper limit of what we should be getting sodium is 2,400 milligrams a day. And I don't think we have any problem reaching that threshold.
But doesn't the high sodium also affect the kidneys and so on?
Right, because that has to do with water balance. Sodium is very important in water balance in the body. This is an interesting stat right here. Take a look at this. Death from diseases of the heart. Think of what kind of technology we have in diagnostic and treatment of these diseases. But look at them. Okay? Look at the disease as we come through here. 1900, you know, we're over here to 2000. Look at this. Now, granted, we are getting a little bit of leeway as we kind of drop in a little bit. But look at how that's taken off.
That's not allowing for population growth the way it's titled. It's not you, per 100,000.
You know, you're right, because the population...
We need a rate, really.
Right. We would have to... those are just the raw numbers. But I think one issue here is also, we talked about earlier, that with technology and things, and mm-hmm. I mean, in the loss of manual labor type jobs, and or just for doing anything, that we're not as physically active. And over here we can see, you know, people always worry about, you know, accidents and things, as we should, but you can see how low accidents are. Here, this is the red are males, and these are females over here. But you can see here, total cardiovascular disease, and then followed by cancer are the two major leading causes of death. Now, we're getting back over there, we talk about exercise, and there we go. Walking the dog, right?
Dog is healthy.
Be physically active. Okay, some stages of atherosclerosis. We know that normally, you know, this is what it should look like. Nice and smooth in here. And over time, we start to get more and more buildup. One thing that's kind of interesting, that especially, we talk about the people who might have a sudden heart attack. And why? One reason why aspirin is so helpful, because you get a blood clot that breaks away, and you have a sticky substance here, and the clot tends to stick there, and it allows these things to stick together. Where aspirin, it reduces those platelets, keeps them from sticking together as much. And so when someone breaks off this, and you get a clot forming or a heart attack in the smaller vessels of the heart, that it's less likely to happen if you're on a regular regimen of aspirin. You can see here what's happening here. You can see the whole continuum to here, where we get this occlusion. And at this point, it becomes very hard in the arteries. And, you know, they try doing the angioplasty where they go in. In many cases, they'll try putting a stent to extend. It's a little wire mesh that extends open to open these up a bit more. And if that is already turned to calcium, calcified in there, that's when they have to do a bypass surgery. Now, this is... back here, let me move this here. While I was putting this... oops, let me move back. This is the Bogalusa study. I had to look this up. This is in Louisiana. And they went and checked these young people. They're 2 to 15 years old, and they were found 50% of 2 to 15-year-olds had coronary fatty streaks in their arteries, the very early beginnings of atherosclerosis. And even 21 to 39, over 80% had the streaks. And then these are the more serious ones where we get a more significant buildup. And you can see as they were getting older here, pretty high amounts here. Now, a loaded study, after having just went to a conference last week in New Orleans, knowing that probably in Louisiana their diets and their food, you know, in the South may not be as good as of other places, but realizing here are young people who are already showing early stages of cardiovascular disease. And here we can see here, this is this kind of like when the plaque ruptures, and this is kind of that blood clot that can be a problem from that buildup in the arteries. I like to look at things as 3D health. The 3Ds are, first of all, discover your risks. Know what your risks are. Okay, if it's high, then do some aggressive management. You may have to do some significant dietary changes, activity changes, possibly even some medications. Moderate, say moderate risk factor. If your risk is low, then just follow a reasonably healthy lifestyle. Design your goals. How are you going to reach the goals for good health? And then the ISD is do the program that you need to achieve your good health. Let's look at some dietary guidelines. Those omega-3 oils. Okay. You can see they're in lots of different types of fish, walnuts, canola oil, green leafy vegetables. Monounsaturated. The big one here is olive oil. They're finding a lot of very beneficial results in a lot of the studies they looked at. We'll look at that here coming up. Get 7 or more servings of fruits and vegetables per day. Balance animal protein and vegetable protein. Okay, legumes, especially soybeans and nuts, are good vegetable sources of protein. Avoid saturated fats. Choose those leaner meats. Also, avoid the oils that are high in that omega-6 fatty acids. Some of these are less attractive oils than the olive oils and canola oils. I think it's pretty clear now that the trans fats have emerged on food labels now, and we know that most of these kind of things, you don't need me to tell you that those aren't good for you. And of course, the unrefined cereals and grains too. Here we go. This is the one I've been talking about here. First of all, we have, this is in the purple color here, the percent of calories from fat in the traditional diet. In Japan, only 10% of the calories, where ours is, well, should be 25 to 30, and in many cases maybe higher than that. And this is the incidence of coronary heart disease per 10,000 men. There we go. We're basing it on a set number there over 10 years. You can see in Eastern Finland that they have a diet of 38% fat. Of course, you can see we have different items in there, and they have a pretty high incidence of heart disease. Now let's go over here. We can see in Crete, off of Greece, that 40% of their diet is fat. That's pretty high. But guess what? They're getting a lot of olive oil and some other healthier oils that are showing a very, very low incidence. So it's not just, you know, looking at the amount of fat. What kind of fats are you getting in your diet? And you can see some of the examples here. I think they're also They're also getting red wine, and I can't remember. There's some other things. There's a pretty extensive article. A guy from through National Geographic, I think, has been studying. Is anyone familiar with that book? There's a that was going around looking at some of these different cultures around the world and see what they eat, what their incidence of various disease.
So, but what about that Japan one? Are they unhealthy because they only have 10% fat, and you say it's supposed to be, or the studies say 25%?
Well, I guess we're looking at this more from the standpoint of fat and heart disease. And so, we're not saying they're unhealthy. I mean, they are getting some fat. But even you go this low on the fat numbers, and they are still having more people with heart disease than this group over here that had four times as much fat in their diet.
Now, I've heard too that the Japanese, when they come to this country and adapt our Western diet, they have the same type of incidence of heart disease.
Right. You can just see how the weight loss can have a whole trickle-down effect of significant health improvement. Now, you want to start easy? You got to watch it, though. Better not be running on the jogging path, though, right? And remember, a brisk walk just as effective here than the dog jogger there. Okay, we know that cancer is abnormal, uncontrolled growth of cells, which left untreated can ultimately cause death. 85 million Americans will develop cancer at some time in their life. And we can see the incidence of cancers, prostate being number one in men, breast cancer number one in females, with lung and colorectal cancers following up after that. So, studies are showing that the risk of developing colon cancer is decreased by half in people who are exercising regularly. Same thing with the estrogen-dependent cancers. The prostate cancers are decreased with regular exercise as well. Also, weight-bearing exercises are really key to reducing osteoporosis. There's a thing called Wolf's Law, and it means that bone adapts to the stresses that are put on it. So if you're walking and doing weight-bearing activities, it will make the bone stronger because it adapts to the stress that you put on it. Swimming, great activity, great exercise. I'm not going to take anything away from swimming. However, you lose the weight-bearing part of this, and so Your bones will not adapt as quickly as those who are doing a weight bearing activity.
So when you say weight bearing, I always think that means you got to lift weights.
No, weight bearing. This is a weight bearing. Walking is a weight bearing.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's a weight bearing. We're bearing weight. Exactly.
Okay, I walk.
Obviously, breast self examination very, very important. And on the other hand, testicular self-examination for men also very important. In both cases, you're just looking for abnormal masses and lumps. You find anything, then further diagnostics. And
isn't that cancer usually younger people?
It is typically in younger people, yes. Now, here is one of the most preventable forms of cancer, skin cancer. And we know that the melanoma is the bad one, the one that can most frequently metastasize and spread throughout the body. Here's one tidbit. I always have a dermatologist that comes in and talks to my class, and you get the laws of diminishing returns, he's told me, when you look at this sun protection factor. That when you move at 15, it's 94% protection. And you move, when you go to a 30, you move to a 96%. So it goes up very slowly. So the people say, well, I've got a 60 F, SPF on. The most important thing is frequent reapplication, because these numbers are based on a heavy coat applied regularly. It's not like I put a nice little light coat on, I go swimming, and then at the end of the day, I get to sunburn. And
what is the 96%?
That is the amount of protection, of sun protection, that you get when you're using those applied in a pretty heavy regular. And also it's recommended that you don't, you let it sit for a little bit, kind of adheres to the skin, and it works better after it's been put on a few minutes. So I guess the point of it is, these people that pay a lot of money for the really high numbers, that yes, it does get better, but you're not gaining a lot at the end there.
The last slide didn't mention the UVA. Yes. Yeah. Just UVB.
Right. Okay.
Is they both very important?
Yes. Both. I'm trying to remember this. The one, I know, penetrates much deeper. I'm trying to remember between the two of those. They're both bad. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head here which one of those has the worst.
But the earlier sunscreens didn't have protection against one or the other. I forget which it was now.
Right.
But now I think most of them have an A and B.
Right. They will protect against both.
They're going to change the ratings on that this year.
Oh, okay.
Either the numbers or the UVA and UVB.
So yeah, they call it broad spectrum.
Broad spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the new thing.
Okay.
If you get a tan, can you take more sun safely?
You know what? My dermatologist that came in, with, first of all, you want the definition? If you look up tanning in the dictionary, what the definition of tanning is? It's the process of turning hide to leather. When you think of like tanning, which is really what it is. And the dermatologist said that is really kind of a myth that everyone thinks, I need to go out and do the tanning thing, do a lot of tanning prior to, say, going on a vacation or something. The best thing is just make sure you're using a lot of sunscreen, and you maybe even in clothing as well. You got to remember, clothing, it isn't 100% sun protection factor either.
The clothing has
even
ratings too.
Yeah.
Has ratings.
So protect that skin. It's possible to prevent 35% of cancers with a healthy diet, maintaining healthy weight, regular exercise, and of course we know not using tobacco. Maintain a healthy weight can reduce a lot of risk of cancers there. Foods that may prevent cancer. Now, may is the key word here. No one has found the magic pill or the magic vitamin. We do know that antioxidants, interesting about antioxidants, every so often in splitting elements down in the body, a maverick oxygen molecule goes around. It's called a free radical. It can go around and cause damage. Sometimes free radicals are linked to cancers and a lot of other things. So, how do you stop this maverick oxygen molecule? Antioxidant. So, vitamins A, C, and E are antioxidants. Carotenoids is actually part of vitamin A, like beta carotene. And also selenium, they found, is also an antioxidant. There's also growing evidence showing that vitamin D may help prevent some kind of cancer. It's also very helpful for many other things, too. I know a lot of doctors are really strongly recommending. The main function of vitamin D also, in addition to this, is helps in the absorption of calcium. That's why on the milk carton, you always see vitamin D added, because it helps to absorb the calcium that's in that milk. There's some questions here. We don't know the answers. Do these foods prevent cancer? They may or may not. But cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, They might contain, or they contain some phytochemicals that reduce the cancer risk. Just remember, a wide variety of vegetables, go for that color spectrum that we've talked about. Okay, diabetes mellitus. Now, this is interesting. Way back when, I'm sure physicians really appreciated when a test other than this one could come up. But it literally means sweet urine. And ancient physicians, and I'm not sure how far that goes back, would taste a patient's urine as a part of the diagnosis to see if it tasted sweet. Because they would be excreting the sugar. It wouldn't be metabolized in the body. It would be excreted. Okay. Type 1 diabetes is the beta cells in the pancreas are destroyed for whatever reason. A pancreatitis. I had a student that just got a really bad flu, and for some reason, it affected his pancreas, and you know, at 17 years old, became a type 1 diabetic. And it usually occurs in children, usually younger children, but can occur at any age, and so it's like an autoimmune, so it means your own body attacks the pancreas. So those beta cells in the pancreas make insulin. Now, here is type 2. Now, type 1, we don't really have a lot of control over. It's usually one of those things that happen. The type 2 is a national epidemic. It used to be called adult onset diabetes. You know, now we're finding a lot of young people are becoming type 2 diabetic. Of course, obesity, sedentary, family history, high blood pressure, and also high cholesterol can play roles in that. It's a growing health problem. It has risen sixfold since 1950. Now about 17 million Americans, about one-third of them, don't even know that they have the disease. We already mentioned how it's affecting the youth. We know that insulin, which is made by those beta cells in the pancreas, allow the body to break down glucose or sugar. Okay. And when something goes wrong in the body so that you can't make the insulin, or the body becomes resistant, or it's not sensitive to that, that's when we become diabetic. And that means that your body produces high levels of glucose, and then that high levels of glucose, the body doesn't like living in that environment with a lot of sugar. They'd rather burn the sugar for energy, which it can't without insulin. Okay, long-term damage, dysfunction, failure of various organs, eyes, kidneys, nerves, heart, a lot of vascular blood vessel problems. Some symptoms of type 2, cuts and bruises that are slow to heal, tingling or numbness in the hands or feet, blurred vision, one of the leading causes of blindness is diabetes. And you can see a long laundry list here of leading cause of blindness, kidney disease, and some pretty staggering numbers. Because of the poor circulation, a lot of times limbs are amputated.
Is there a test for diabetes, type 2 diabetes?
Yes. Well, obviously, blood sugar, blood glucose is the primary one. There are other more advanced blood tests, too, that can look at more long-term levels as well. But blood glucose the simple test, the urine test, but not, they're typically blood glucose is the classic one. So usually it's type 2 is one that develops over a period of years, and people who get this are insulin resistant several years before they actually are diagnosed and their blood sugars become abnormal. So we call it pre-diabetes. Feeling tired, weak, large volumes of urine, especially at night, infections, we mentioned the eyesight, so a lot of different issues with that. And another thing we're talking about, high numbers are unaware. So, to finish up here, let's stay healthy so that we can enjoy things like this. And by the way, this is Glacier Peak. This is not a long ways from here. In fact, I did this on a loop where I came around Lyman Lake over Cloudy Pass. Mm-hmm. And the next night, we camped it at...
Image Lake.
We didn't go out to... It was not too far from Image Lake. We could have made that route out to Image Lake and back. But this is Buck Creek Pass right here. So we want to stay healthy so that we can enjoy...
Oh, that's beautiful.
The many-colored grace of God.
Good.
God makes some beautiful foods for us to eat. And this is actually a photo that I took at Pike Place Market in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
Actually, since I do the photography thing, and this is actually an HDR photo, which is high dynamic range, and I took three photos and sandwiched them together to get that painterly look to them. So. Thank you. Any questions?